Good morning. Eva Gnenakou, you are Sustainability Director at Multiplex, which is a global construction company. And we have met on a couple of occasions. And I'm very glad you joined us today. Thank you very much. And good morning.
Good morning, Virginie. Thank you very much for the invite. Indeed, your digital conference sounds very interesting, and I was really happy to receive the invitation from you. Really good to see you today.
Good to see you too. So the project is about having an in-depth conversation on sustainability, its challenges, and how it's integrated in your company. My first question to you, Eva, is what does public value mean to you?
Public value, I think, is the most important question of today, I would say, and probably always. But I'm glad that recently it has been coming to the fore as an explicit question. I think it was always there. I'm saying that because, for example, the reason I have chosen this path in life, this career path, is exactly that I would like to add value to the society that we live in and for the people that we share this planet with. So public value to me is everything that we can do to help and be part of people being happy, healthy, and prosperous. In that sense, businesses have a big role to play, of course. I would say that businesses are set up, if you allow me to say, to offer public value. Because the things that we are here to produce or build or enable, if it's a company that offers services, is to do with covering some sort of human demand. If it is transport or buildings or information, it is covering a human need. I think the big question is, are we covering one human need but damaging another, maybe? And this is the big question that I think the conversations about public value are about today.
I understand that a big global company like Multiplex, you're building huge buildings around the world and also particular architectural innovations, I would say. Mm-hmm. You are, of course, deeply involved in sustainability, the scarce resources. Maybe we can touch on sand that is disappearing on the planet, the human resources and some abuses. So your discourse is quite interesting, and that before we get into details, I think it's a bit new indeed, because until recently, the big corporations such as Multiplex were driven by profit and profit only. So can you explain the path and the evolution of sustainability in such a big corporation like Multiplex, for example?
Yes. I would say that any sort of profitable and long-term profitable business, a good, if not explicitly, somewhere in there have ethics and values in their makeup and in their thinking. Because without values, you cannot have a sustainable business. You could have a type of a firework business, to use an example, that sort of shines for a short period of time and then sort of disappears. But any business that has had a journey and is around for a number of years, would have the element of ethics. And for me, environmental and social responsibility go hand in hand with economic sustainability. If you don't respect your clients, your customers, the people you do business with, your supply chain partners, and the people that you are in essence called to be serving as the end users of buildings or whatever your business is, they need to be respected and feel that. So I think there is an element, and the most successful businesses have been emphasizing that a lot, or others took a stance of not to talk about it too much because it was so embedded in their business and it was more obvious through their services. But what we're seeing now is that other businesses that perhaps did not have that in their narrative are trying to find ways of making it more obvious, because I don't think it's obvious how a big corporation such as Multiplex is responsible towards the environment and towards the society. It's things that we do, I think, that probably people don't get to see day to day. So it's hard for them to imagine or visualize. And I think you're right, because often when I try to explain what I do to some of my friends, they have a perplexed look, thinking, what does a construction company have to do with environmental protection or human trafficking or, you know, reducing carbon emissions, even though that is becoming clearer thanks to a lot of good.
You said two things interesting, and I would like to stay a bit on that. You said the most corporations are changing their narrative. Is it about narrative, or is it about shaping a different corporate strategy? How much of it is integrated into the DNA of the corporation?
That's a very good question. And I think the two things are interlinked. Because, for example, I often say that sustainability professionals have to be two things. We have to be really good from a technical side, so we understand the issues that can be deeply technical, but also be very good communicators, because the narratives and the stories that we use help people understand what the problem is. Some people are not aware of the fact that there is a problem. Why is it important? How can we do something about it? And how important what we often propose as measures is, and what the result of that is going to be. So the narrative brings a positive cycle of bringing the problem and the solution to the fore, and motivating people to keep doing what is good. And I think because maybe the narrative wasn't really there, or the fact that what we do is done in a responsible manner, or what we do has a positive public value, wasn't in the narrative, that didn't trigger the thinking in people's heads to understand the power that they have in their daily personal lives or business lives, in their daily decisions on how they can be contributing even more or more holistically or more fully to public value. What I mean by that is, for example, in my domain, which is buildings, good designers would have positive environmental well-being design embedded in their design. But do we all stop and think about the minor changes that we may make, what impact those could have on the environment or the materials and the supply chain, the people that make the materials, to the end user's experience in the building. And these are issues we would like to bring to the fore so that everyone in the chain of events that lead up to wonderful buildings can do their best. So the buildings are designed with that in mind. The materials are bought from responsible supply chains. The buildings are built with low carbon technologies or zero carbon technologies, and the buildings operate again in a zero carbon manner and are a place that is thoroughly enjoyable by the occupants of the building.
And yeah, so it is fully integrated in the way you operate. In a way, it's not only the cherry on the cake and greenwashing the roofs of the building. It's really about integration. That's what you're saying.
It is. And I'm not saying our job is done, but I think that in the recent years, we've seen a big change in the public. And I think it's because a lot of people are now very prominent. We've got Greta Thunberg that is doing a great job on all levels, creating a lot of publicity.
Yes.
Raising people's awareness and saying, you know, I don't want your hope. I don't want you to be hopeful. I want you to panic and act as if your house was on fire. And I think this is the type of call to action that we need. And the positive thing is now we can, because the solutions are here. We do have alternatives. We do have low carbon alternatives and zero carbon alternatives that can help slow down the global heating and prevent it. We do have alternatives that can contribute to a circular economy. An economy where materials are part of a natural cycle, so they can go back to nature and biodegrade and come from nature, or systems where a material is recycled to the exact same material, not being downcycled, not lose its value, go back to a material that can be exactly reused as it was. And for example, multiplex, just recently, to give you an example from now, is the fact that we are using, for example, plastic protection to protect parts of the building that are finished. So when the other tradesmen pass through, the other tradespeople pass through, they don't scratch it, for example. So this plastic is then removed when the building is completely finished, taken back to the factory that produced it, so they can make it back into the exact same product. And therefore, working with our supply chain partners, we've created a closed loop system, and we've used that on one project up to now very successfully, and we prevented something like 64 basketball courses in terms of surface area of plastic becoming waste. That means that it's not going to be downcycled, and it's not going to be finding its way into the oceans of plastic on our seas. That's an example of the circular economy work that we are doing.
That's right. Nicole, you also work on fighting trafficking of human beings. I understand that there is a UK Act, and then the regulators could have helped you focus on that. But I'd like you to tell us, what is trafficking of human beings in construction, and is it a phenomenon that we see only very far away from Europe, as people tend to believe.
Yes, it's really, really interesting. You are absolutely right, there has been a recent change in the UK with the Modern Slavery Act. It came into force in 2015, so fairly recently. And we've already seen a step change, even though it has been labeled as a soft, if you like, approach, as there wasn't any specific strong enforcement threat. It was more of a reputational damage. And I thought that was a clever way for the government to do it. So according to the Act, bigger corporations have to publish a statement in a prominent place on their website on what they've done in a number of areas in order to prevent modern slavery. When I'm saying in a number of areas, they gave a clear guidance that this should contain our own businesses, but also our supply chain. It should be about due diligence in procurement. We should have KPIs to monitor it. And every year we should report for the year before. So that that was, and you could just be legally compliant if you said I did nothing and that was in your statement. So of course, no law, like reasonable business, would choose that path. So that sort of gently and psychologically sort of nudges you to try and do something. And that soft approach actually had a transformational effect in the UK industry. Even though not everyone has taken those steps, I would say that the vast majority of the more prominent businesses has already taken huge steps. The difficulty that we often have is that not everyone has the same opinion about what modern slavery is or how it manifests itself. And I often encounter two different opinions. One that says that we can't possibly imagine any modern slaves on a construction site, because I think people have in mind someone that is in a cage or locked up somewhere as the definition of modern slavery. And some others say, oh, Eva, you know, it's so embedded in construction, you will never be able to do anything about it. So I would say I would disagree with both those opinions. Construction can have modern slaves, unfortunately, because a lot of people are vulnerable around the world and they travel to the UK to find a better life. And the legislation is often different over here from their own country. And also they don't speak English that well necessarily to understand the legislation. So the issue is that they don't know their own rights. They don't often understand how much they should be paid, is one scenario, or they don't understand whether it's legal for them or not to work here, or how it could be legal for them to work here. So they often fall victims of people that take part of their salary, arrange accommodation for them that is unhealthy and not comfortable, does not allow them to have the rest that they need. They control even their eating, and therefore these people work very hard but have a really tough, unpleasant life. And to tackle that, we have now worked with the government and other construction companies and created some induction slides that all of the people that come through our construction sites will see as part of their compulsory induction process, and that not only raises awareness on their rights in this country, but also gives them information on how to confidentially seek help if they are concerned about themselves or others. Uh-huh. And this is part of the measures we have taken to combat this phenomenon. That's an extremely complex phenomenon. And to answer the second part of your question, of course, modern slavery is not only what we see on our construction sites. We often get products on our sites that come from other parts of the world or from areas that we don't get to necessarily see every day, like we do our construction sites. So what about those materials, and what is our responsibility? If we have a hard job to do, it's quite tough in the sense that we are a principal contractor in construction based in London, and we have vast supply chains that are 2, 3, 4 tiers down and can be from all parts of the world with different legal frameworks, different social frameworks, and a different understanding of what is acceptable and what we consider to be the right way to treat people. So,
monitoring supply chain a regular activity at your place? Is it in your department, or is it really something different? How often are your supply chains monitored?
We have started the past few years adding more and more due diligence in our business processes. So we have worked with the legal, the contracts, and the procurement department to insert clauses around this matter and to make our tier one supply chain responsible for their own supply chains in turn. And we ask them questions which we review, but we realize that there is often lack of awareness of the problem, its significance, and also the solutions. So what we have now done is we've collaborated with Stronger Together, which is an anti-slavery alliance, to offer free training. By sponsoring Stronger Together, we offer free training from experts to our supply chain organizations so they can set up their own modern slavery arrangements and management systems, as they are a step closer to the eventual suppliers. They can have better control themselves of what is happening rather than just us checking, if that makes sense.
Interesting. I wanted to go back, if you accept, to the role of the regulators. Without such a strong regulator or such a strong anti-slavery act in the UK, would a company like Multiplex or another big company start the same steps? Because the UK is quite advanced compared to other European countries. So what's the role of the regulator in shaping a proper sustainability strategy?
I think the role of the regulator is quite important. I'm not one that thinks that the government is responsible for everything, and unless the government does nothing, nothing happens, because I don't think that is fair, and we are all responsible for our own actions, if you like. So in that sense, we should all take on the responsibility that is proportionate to us and to our influence. But I think the regulator is there and is important for them to take steps to make it an even playing field There has been a fear in the business and other businesses, I think, that if we put our head above the parapet, it will be us that will be targeted, perhaps unfairly, because our name will be heard and therefore we become an easy target. So the regulator ensures that everyone has to do something and sort of unlocks the potential for doing something without the fear of repercussions if we don't get it perfect.
So what about competitiveness? You talked just now about a level playing field. I'm sure you compare each other within one industrial field. I really don't need any name, but do you think that the values that are incorporated in your company is a real competitive advantage? And is there any survey you would do internally between profit and values? In other words, is it worth it?
I think it's absolutely worth it, and you can definitely see that you develop stronger relationships with the supply chain, you develop stronger relationships with the client, you have a more robust business because you understand what your people are doing. Things like modern slavery have an impact on the quality of the workmanship, and it can have major impacts in your business if the products and the work aren't right. So that's an additional factor. I'm not saying we do this because of the quality, but it has implications that go further, is what I'm trying to say. And the people in the business are much happier to work and stay with us if they know we are a responsible business. And that's why I was saying before, the narrative is important, because sometimes people need to hear the narrative, even if the facts are the same as before. If the narrative is there, that helps reinforce that. So we have stronger relations with the clients, stronger relationships with the supply chains. We have our talent remain in the business because they understand what they do and they are happy to be part of it. And the society, we add public value to them by helping over here and elsewhere, people having their human rights, labor practices respected, having inclusion, having diversity on our construction sites, and we've done a lot on that aspect as well. Also working towards a healthier environment that makes, and a healthy planet that makes people healthy, cleaner air, for example, more biodiversity, a more pleasant environment for our people and for the societies around us to be around and to be in better well-being. We feel better. We all have one life after all. Let's make sure that is as pleasant and as meaningful as it can be.
Well, thank you, Eva. This is a very nice conclusion. I want to thank you for your time and the openness that you had today. That was quite an interesting conversation. Thanks a million.
Thank you very much, Rosine. Thank you.